I think this is the time. This is the time to do this thing, because here we are. We're sitting on the brink of something. I don't know quite what it is. In fact, people have been always aware of this, you know. I was listening the other day to a guy giving a speech on the air, and he was talking about the sense of uneasiness that people have all over the country, in fact, all over the world, and no one can quite put a finger on it. And you know, this uneasiness is taking very, very strange tacks. One of the things that it's taking the peculiar twist that even very official people are being to look just a little confused. You know what I mean by official people? Like the New York Times, for example. What is more official than the Wall Street Journal? I mean, that's a very official newspaper. Very, very. Well, the Wall Street Journal the other day had a great little editorial, just appeared, you see, right down the middle of the front page, by a guy named Joseph Evans. And he starts out, you see, he's talking about space. He's talking about the obvious things, you know, such as how much it's going to cost to get into space, how much it's going to cost to send guys out to other planets, how many years of research it's going to take, how many hours of terrible human travail and human sweat and blood and misery it's going to take to get up there. And then he goes all the way through this, you see, and he talks about where we're going to go and how far we're going to go and the tremendous barriers that we're going to crack. And then way down the line, about the third or fourth paragraph, he says some of the questions that are raised, however, are metaphysical. For example, no one can quite tell why we want to do it, why we have to do this, what terrible urge there is inside of man to get to Saturn. And he says the old idea, you know, the old expressions, oh, well, scientific knowledge, scientific knowledge, scientific knowledge. He said these seem to be, to many philosophers today, to be merely a kind of rationalization. You know what I mean by rationalization in this case? Just what scientific knowledge. And then he goes on, and this is the wildest little statement he makes here. He says, still nothing is without its price. Suppose we are eventually able to go beyond our solar system into other galaxies, in infinity. Where do we stop? Will there be any rational justification for sending people on years-long trips through the black night of space? And since many scientists suspect there is intelligent life somewhere in other galaxies, will we be inviting more trouble than ever dreamed of on this poor little sphere? Oy, 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 oy. Oh, oy, 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 oy. $87 billion. And all we did was open the door to the giant troglodyte men, who finally got bugged so much that they decided to come back and squash us. All of us. Russians. Everyone. Egyptians. Burmese. Guys from the Grand Concourse. The whole crew. Fantastic diseases come back. Sent by the lights. Bolton. Sound waves, all of it comes in. You know, I'll tell you, one of the saddest pictures, though, this idea of going to space and this terrible itch we've got, Ed, I cannot help but think that one of the things that most of our space dreaming is based on, one of the great interesting human illusions, and that is this, that somewhere out there, wherever it is we're going to go, we will find beings who are infinitely superior to us. We like that idea. Have you noticed how many guys on the Long John Show keep talking about these great superior beings that are going to show up here and show us how to cut out war and how to cut out famine and how to cut out cancer and to live perfect lives? You know, it's almost every one of them has that gimmick. Well, this is an old mankind dream, you know. It's tied up with religious problems. It's tied up with the savior complex, all kinds of wild things, that somewhere out in the black space of night is the answer. And there it is. We'll find it if we get in the ship and go. Well, I can't help but think of the fantastic picture. Can't you see it now? These six guys, finally all of mankind, has gotten together, see? And they finally are going to launch this ship, and it's going to take off for Mars. And the whole world is waiting. It's just like a hush. This is the moment that all of mankind has worked for. It's built toward this thing. Thousands and thousands and thousands of men have died in the great long struggle to build this enormous ship that is going to bring the eternal and the final human answer out of the galaxies themselves beyond the seventh sun of Arcturus. It is now countdown time for the great moment in history. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. All systems are all clear. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Walter Cronkite at the scene of the great launching of Arcturus 7, the first spaceship launched into infinity, man's eternal probing towards the vastnesses of the outermost ring of the galaxy. We now see the ship rising. All things seem to be working correctly. We notice that you can see it on the screen there down at the base. You can notice that the booster rockets are working correctly. We will now switch over to Mercury Control Center, Arcturus number 7 Control Center, excuse me. That was a previous shot, ladies and gentlemen. Arcturus Control Center, come in, Colonel J.L. Smithers.
All systems are okay?
Yes.
All of gyroscope rockets number 7 are A-OK.
And so the launching, ladies and gentlemen, this is Walter Cronkite here. The launching was properly effected at exactly 1 minute past 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time here from our great rocket launching path. All of the assembled scientists of the world have gathered and pooled their knowledge into this one gigantic effort to contact outermost space to see whether or not there is life on the planets that lie just beyond the edge of our solar system. Many questions that have bugged mankind for centuries will be answered in just a few short hours. The ship, according to all the information we have received from Arcturus number 2 Control Center, is proceeding downrange. The checkout courses have all checked out properly. The one on Bermuda Island has checked it out okay. We now are about to receive another report from Arcturus to Central Headquarters Control Center. Come in. Are you set down there, Colonel J.L. Smithers?
They're okay.
We now return you to our regular program schedule, and from moment to moment, we will give you information as we receive it here at Arcturus 2 Control Center. This historic moment, of course, is being watched with great anxiety and interest by scientists and indeed the little peoples all over the world. There is no question about it, but many things hang in the balance at this time. We do not know whether or not the spaceship is properly oriented, or whether it will have to be, as we say, you'll excuse the expression, it will have to be aborted. This is a technical expression which refers to bringing the ship back to Earth when it has been properly misoriented. We could go into the technical details here, but that's all been explained to you by Edward R. Murrow earlier in our broadcast. Mr. Murrow, as you know, is in charge with technical communication and explaining the final philosophical connotations of the metaphysical details of our flight. We also will have Louis Strauss here in a few moments. Pandit Nehru is on the other end of our beeper phone. We're now in touch with Mr. Nehru. Mr. Nehru, would you please tell us what you think of the flight as it's proceeding? You understand that everything is, as we say here in Arcturus Control Center 2, A-OK. Mr. Nehru, what do you have to say on the subject this morning for the waiting peoples of the world. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Nehru. I'm sure that these words of cheer, which have been relayed on to the brave astronauts, or as we call them, galaxnauts, has been relayed on to them, and I'm sure that that will spur them on their way in their trip to Venus. We now have contacted, we have on the beeper phone, yes, Charles, on the beeper phone. We now have Jack Parr on the beeper phone, who is vacationing in Berlin. Mr. Parr's on the beeper phone, and I'm sure you'll be all interested in hearing what Jack Parr has to say about this historic occasion that will go down as one of the great turning points in man's eternal striving to achieve total final knowledge. Are you there, Jack? Well, thank you very much, Jack. I'm sure that the galaxnauts will be spurred on their way by your words of cheer. We have received some more information. We're going to switch you now to, I see that they've got an announcement they'd like to make from Arcturus II, Arcturus II Control Center. Are you there, Colonel Smithers? Are you there, Colonel Smithers? I guess there's a little confusion there, ladies and gentlemen. We have just received the control light that there. Are you there, Colonel Smithers? In our Arcturus Control Center, will you please come in? Well, I am sure that all of you heard that announcement direct from the control center here at Arcturus II headquarters. Those are words of good cheer, and I'm sure that all of you waiting people out there, and we're now going to switch you. I see we've just received a report that Charles Collingwood is standing by at Grand Central Station back in New York City, where over 400,000 people have gathered on their coffee break to watch this historic occasion. Is the picture coming in clearly there, Charles? And how are the people reacting back there in Gotham? Thank you, Charles. And I'm sure that the people all over the country would like to voice the same sentiments as you have just voiced. This is Walter Cronkite here. Walter Cronkite, broadcasting to you direct from the site of the launching, which just occurred. Now we're going to bring in the telemetric system here to give you an exact count, the exact number of moments or minutes that have passed since the launching of the historic Arcturus II space probe containing six intrepid galaxnauts who are now heading towards Venus. You can see the telemetric system there right now. They have been in flight now for... Yes, I see now. They've been in flight now for over 1 hour and 17 minutes. And everything seems to be going along okay. As we say here in astro jet circles, okay is an expression which means everything is going hunky-dory in an earlier language. We'd like to turn you over here for just a moment. We have several very important physicists. We have two or three philosophers standing by. We have we have Carl Sandburg, who has dropped by with his guitar. And Carl Sandburg would like to say a few words from the standpoint of the poet about the flight, which, as you see, now just one more, hold a minute there, Carl. I'm listening on my earphone here. I think there's an announcement coming in from Colonel Smithers over in headquarters. Yes, Colonel. Yes, oh, all right, fine. Well, we'll, as soon as we get Mr. Sandburg off the air here, yes. Carl Sandburg, would you please tell us what you think of this wonderful, wonderful moment in history, which, as you know, is going to go down as one of the great turning points in all of man's terrible, long, hard striving towards total knowledge. Now, Mr. Sandberg, the first question I'd like to ask you would be, is a poet really moved by a sight such as we are witnessing today? Would you please tell me?
Abraham Lincoln,
thank you very much, Mr. Sandberg. We've appreciated the folk song and your reference to Abraham Lincoln and the reference to the fact that you are now available for one night shots and special programs such as the Ed Sullivan Show. We'll relay that back to Central Headquarters. Thank you. Old, colorful, friendly, reliable, sober, solid, shaggy American Carl Sandberg. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's quite evident now that the flight is going under perfect conditions. They are over 2.5 billion miles now from Earth and heading further out. We have just received another report from the Central Headquarters here. Colonel Smithers has called in. He said everything is all right. And we here at Central Headquarters at Arcturus II launching pad, Walter Cronkite here, we are going to be back from time to time during our regular program schedule, various programs such as Against the Storm, Against the Tornado, On the Edge of Blackness, On the Edge of Night. We have a beautiful... Well, those are various programs that we will interrupt from time to time to bring you more information as our intrepid galaxnauts approach Venus in the final summation and the final achievement of man's eventual search for total knowledge. Walter Cronkite here. We'll stand by, and for further information, stay tuned to this channel. Thank you very much, Mr. Sandberg. Wasn't that exciting? I wonder if they ever got there. Do you want to hear the episode when they're landing now? Do you want to hear that one? You want to hear? No. I know what happened. Sure, I have a third eye right in the middle of my kneecap. Seriously. I mean, we got an itch, baby. I mean, mankind just can't stand still, and he's going to get out there one day, and it's going to be the surprise of his little old everlasting life. You're going to be stuck out there with all those mashed potatoes and no steak. You know? They got this great sign up here at the Hayden Planetarium, you know? Big blue and white sign. It says solar system and restrooms that way. So I suspect I know what the first thing that's going to happen when they land on Mars, but that's another story. I'm not so sure that that'll be recorded or reported, but nevertheless, you know, it's a long trip. But do you want to hear what happens? You want to hear the rest of the story? You think Theodore Sturgeon is good? Let me tell you, boy. You think Ray Bradbury's got it down pat? Let me tell you. That's kid stuff, greasy kid stuff. All right. Okay, now, you want to hear this? All right, now here's the soap opera. It's going on. See, ladies and gentlemen, we break into this program now. We have just received a flash from Walter Cronkite down at our big launching base at Arcturus II that the information is just coming in that our galaxnauts are about to make an approach landing on a far-flung planet beyond our solar system. We have not yet received an information as to what planet it is that they are reaching. They have passed Venus, past Mars, and we are now going to turn you over to Walter Cronkite. Take it away, Walter. Thank you, Control Center, the Walter Cronkite here. This is Walter Cronkite, the spokesman for the jet space age, the voice of the calm man on the street, unperturbed, viewing the situation with cold and sometimes vaguely amused detachment. We have just received information from Arcturus II headquarters, from control headquarters. Colonel Smithers has just given us the information that the spaceship Arcturus II is about to land on subplanet 714-6SJ7-GT. This planet is a little-known planet in the second galaxy beyond the third ring of the innermost cosmos. This is a technical phrase meaning it's pretty far. We've had from time to time several famous astronomers on who have explained to you the long elliptical fourth-dimensional flight of our space probers and the exciting time that they have had. Of course, we are all familiar with the weightlessness problem, which early astronauts discussed at great length. The problem of timelessness, which the galaxnauts have had to encounter, of course, is by now one of the most talked-about stories throughout the entire civilized world. Timelessness being the state of no time. The men have traveled now over 14 years. We've been here, that's of course earthly years. We have been here on the scene now for over 14 years, whereas the men in the spaceship have not had an actual impression of time passing of more than 7 or 8 minutes. It's difficult to explain this to a layman, but in just a few moments, we are about to switch to the spaceship itself. We are waiting. There is a great delay, of course, a time delay. It takes over 3 days for a radio signal to return from the planet, which for short, the astronomers have shortened to 6SJ7GT, which is the short designation of this planet. It's also known as the code name Octal Base, refers to the code name of this planet. Walter Cronkite here. We have brought along Charles Collingwood. Charles, what do you feel is the eventual outcome of this historic moment in our eventual attempt to solve all the problems of the universe and to achieve final total knowledge? Charles, do you feel that we are about to break through the knowledge barrier? Well, thank you very much, Charles. Hi, George. Well, thank you very much. That was Charles Collingwood, ladies and gentlemen. And in just a few moments, we will take you to Arcturus II, where we understand the galaxnauts have just about made contact with the surface of 6SJ7GT. Over 2¾ billion miles from, according to the men who have calculated it, from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is the focal point of the measuring system used. Take it away, spaceship Arcturus II. Do we hear you? Do we hear you? Do we hear you? Come in, Arcturus II. Come in, Arcturus II. Arcturus II, do you hear us? Arcturus II, this is Walter Cronkite here. Do you hear us? Arcturus II, you are coming through faintly. Would you please repeat what you have just said? Arcturus II, would you please come in? Well, ladies and gentlemen, we seem to be having a little difficulty with the telemetric duo dipole multiple reciprocating series E layer transmission. We will clear that up, we hope, in just a few moments. But until that time, we now return you to the regularly scheduled programs. Walter Cronkite here. We will return as soon as we have information as to the actual landing operations of the galaxnauts in Astro 2. We now return you to Against the Storm. Just received, this is Walter Cronkite here, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry to break into Against the Storm, but we have just received information that Astro number two, Arcturus II, missed its target by 7 light years due to a miscalculation. We've just received information, and they are now heading for Galaxy 7. Galaxy 7 lies, we've just received information from the Astronautical Bureau of the University of California, lies 36 light years to the left of Galaxy number 1, which is, of course, our original target. Now, that means that if all things go correctly, I'll be here standing by in roughly, according to the earliest calculations we can make here, in 134 years... I will be here and give you the information as our gallant galaxnauts land on. Apparently, the target right now appears to be a planet known as 57 Plymouth, which is just the term which we have applied to it. And we will return as soon as we have it. Walter Cronkite here. We return you to our studios.
Fort Macon, Roger, out.
Get to New York, that's you check with your office, I think you're going to have some work with them. Yeah, that's Marvitt's assisting you now, if he's going to change with the mat later on. What time are you figuring that you're up? All right, give me a call when you're finished, huh? Thank you.
Yeah, come on.
Wind west 7.